Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, registered investment advisors, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. I'm here today with Edmund Higginbottom, and so grateful to have him here. He's all the way across the ocean, and we'll figure out where here in a second. Edmund is Managing Director of Verdant Capital, and he has over 20 years of experience in the investment management and investment banking. He started his career in London, and today he is based in South Africa. Edmund has a degree in economics from the University of Cambridge. Just for transparency, we met several years ago through this whole impact investing network and connections, and I'm so grateful that you are here with us here today.
Thank you very much indeed, Jeff. Thank you very much indeed, Stephen.
First of all, where are you located right now?
I'm in Johannesburg. I'm in Verdant Capital's office in Johannesburg. We're about 10 minutes drive from Sandton City and about 20 minutes drive from Johannesburg proper. And Johannesburg is the largest city in South Africa.
Just so that our community can get to know you a little bit, where did you grow up? Maybe where you went to school? And then just a high level of your career. And then I'll ask some more questions from there.
I grew up in England. I was born in London. I spent a lot of my childhood in Cambridgeshire, which is a suburban slash sort of rural area about an hour north of London. I studied at Cambridge University, which is one of the old pre-Reformation universities in England. I studied economics, which was my passion as one of my passions as a child was as a young adult, was learning about how the economy works and how decisions in terms of finance impact real people and impact in real people's lives and how they go about their daily activities or they don't. And after graduating from Cambridge, I went to work in the City of London. I worked in the M&A department of Deutsche Bank, which at that point was a very large powerhouse in the European capital markets and active in the US and around the world, perhaps a little bit less now, but at that time, 20 years ago, just over, it was a very, very strong firm. And then I worked in capital markets and I worked in a US investment bank called Morgan Stanley. And over time, my interest sort of took me into working in, you know, emerging markets. I'd done a lot of business in Western Europe and the UK in a relatively short career. And my interest sort of moved into emerging markets. That was, you know, that became my passion as well. You know, learning about these developing economies and how capital moving into these developing economies could influence a range of industries and the overall economy and create jobs and how that those economies fitted into the broader global economy. Over time, it became apparent to me that working in sort of traditional investment banking in emerging markets, in frontier markets, in less developed parts of the world, it became apparent to me that I was really helping rich people in poor countries. Certainly people live in poor countries, but yeah, helping rich people and very rich people in poor countries become even richer. And there's nothing wrong with that. And a lot of people have created huge wealth for all of their communities, their employees, and helped develop their economies at the same time as, you know, generating a lot of wealth for themselves. So that's absolutely fine. But personally, I wanted to work in industries and I wanted to work in sectors which had a much more important on the ground impact on people, their communities, how they work, where they worked. For that reason, I set up Verdant Capital. We're Verdant Capital, an investment manager and investment bank focused on sub-Sahara Africa and North Africa to some extent, focused on low and middle income countries and low income countries. South Africa is actually upper middle income, believe it or not. It's a very, very unequal and diverse economy from that point of view. But it's technically upper middle income. But, you know, so we do work in South Africa, but our focus is very much lower middle income and low income countries, the countries that really count in terms of the positive impact of capital, and focus on agribusiness and focus on microfinance and financial inclusion. You know, a lot of these things I found were really sort of circling around on the same points. So financial inclusion, very, very important in terms of people's lives and in terms of people's well-being and economic opportunities. But also through my career, I'd always done a lot of work in the banks, in the large banks and medium-sized banks in Western Europe and in the Middle East and elsewhere in the world. And, you know, that was also one of my great interests, which was, you know, the banking sector, how the banking sector works and how banks, you know, make money and are credit worthy and how other banks do less well. So following a little bit of academic interest as well as, you know, very strong and heartfelt developmental mission.
I could have asked about four questions in there, which I'm glad I didn't. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to force myself to ask you now a big question, and then I'll come back because there's a number of things that you said that are very intriguing me. How would you best describe who you are today in the context of where you think you're in your whole life journey? It's a small question.
This is just the beginning. So Verdant Capital, we've been operating 10 years. We've been very successful. Now a firm of 35 people. We have an investment management business. We have a investment advisory business, which helps companies in the impact space raise capital. The business is profitable. It's successful. We've helped a lot of young people build up their careers from the entry level, hiring young graduates out of local universities and taking them up to being very, very good professionals. But equally, this is just a beginning. You know, we've only just scratched the surface. Like, you know, we want to be a very high impact. We want to continue our focus on high impact sectors, and we want to broaden our impact and deepen our impact. We want to be active in more and more situations and magnify our developmental impact on Africa. Firm's 10 years old. I've been running the firm 10 years. I'm only 44 years old. So I can continue to run this firm another 20 years. I want the firm to be taken over by my immediate colleagues and who ideally people who've worked at the firm from, you know, an early stage in their careers. And so that, you know, that life of Verdant Capital can continue having that positive development impact long after I'm no longer able to actually physically work in the company.
It's fascinating because I ask that to a lot of people and there's all differing answers. Clearly, you can see that what you do from a work perspective is aligned with who you are and your belief system. Can you explain for the audience what financial inclusion is? And then tell me a little bit about why Africa? And not so much why Africa from an investing perspective. I mean, yes, I get that. But why did you choose to move to Africa? Probably in addition to the fundamentals of investing in Africa.
Financial inclusion is a basic right and a basic need. It's like access to running water. It's like power. And that may sound crazy. How can you compare financial services to running water? What would you rather have? No access to financial services, nowhere to save money safely, no access to credit whatsoever for your business or anything in your personal life. No way of making payments other than walking, giving somebody cash, or no way of making payments to anybody other than actually in person. Would you prefer to have no access to financial services or no access to running water? Well, obviously you need to have water. Otherwise, you know, human beings can't survive without water. But what if you had a water pump 100 yards from your home? Would you prefer to have access to financial services and no running water? Or would you prefer to have water in your home and no financial services? I know I would choose. And what if that water pump was a mile away? Would you prefer to have no financial services or no running water at home? It's 10 miles away.
Well, what's interesting is I'm not so sure in America, I'll just speak for America here, and this is not to be insensitive because I do know that there are people in America who struggle with financial inclusion. As a blanket statement, Americans, that's not an issue they have to deal with, both on the financial side and on the running water side. So it's an interesting, the best analogy I can give to you is I live in Florida. I've lived here 20 years. We take power for granted until all of a sudden you have a hurricane and you don't have power for a week. Most of America cannot even understand what that's like until you live it. So I'd actually argue most Americans can't even fully understand and articulate what you're describing about financial inclusion.
I think it's a great point. And I think as Africans, I consider myself an African by adoption. As Africans are resourceful and resilient. So we're used to not having power. In Johannesburg, we don't have power all the time. And we're used to not having running water all the time. So we know we have to make a plan. And I count myself to be incredibly fortunate. But there are a lot of people near where I live and and the rest of the country were much, 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 much more resourceful than I am.
Well, you definitely are on a mission that A is worthy. And actually, as Americans, I think we take for granted that there's a bank on every corner, that on my phone, I can trade stock. Oh, by the way, today with as little as $10, I can buy a stock. You know, now there's robo advisors, like the stuff that is at our fingertips, I think skews our at least Americans' view. And so actually hearing your passion and what you're trying to do, do you have any numbers or context to talk about the need from a financial inclusion, maybe in Africa or even around the world, that you can share?
What we've seen over the last 15 years in financial inclusion in Africa is a lot of progress. 15 years ago, 2/3 of people in Africa did not have a bank account. Today, 2/3 of people in Africa don't have a bank account, but 1/3 of people in Africa have mobile money. They have access to a mobile wallet. They can make mobile payments. And that means that about 2/3 of people in Africa either have a bank account or have mobile money. So the number of people excluded from the financial sector has been halved. The number of the people who have access to the financial sector have doubled. And that's very, very important. And a lot of the most interesting financial companies in Africa are actually built on that ecosystem. So if I'm lending money to small merchants at about $100 a time, equivalent to local currency as a financial company, I'm lending a credit business, I'm lending $100 a time. But I've got to physically walk to that guy's spaza. Remember, Africa's a big continent. It's vastly populated. A lot of people, but a big area. I've got to walk 5 miles to that guy's shop to lend him that $100, and then again a week later to collect his first repayment, then again, and then again, then again, then that loan of $100 will never be economic. It's impossible to make money as a financial company making loans of that amount. However, if I can make him a loan of $100 by mobile money, and he can repay by mobile money, and in fact, I can actually, as a financial company, I can actually, I have visibility of that mobile wallet. In fact, I can have a direct payment from that mobile wallet for my interest and principal. That loan all of a sudden becomes a viable business model for these financial companies. So you go from a world where you've got 2/3 of people who don't have any access to financial services to today, where you've got half of those people can now be addressed within traditional financial services or untraditional financial services through these untraditional means. But they can have credit, they can have savings, they can do a broad range of payments. And that's something that you couldn't do 15 years ago. And the businesses that are doing that are doing two things. One, they are providing a very strong social good. Yes, there's due diligence around lending rates and practices, which is very, very important. But as a whole, they're doing good. Secondly, they're making money. I always say the Good Samaritan didn't just have good intentions, he also had money. And these businesses are making money, so they can attract investors and they can pay returns to investors and they can grow their activities. And ultimately, that's what Verdant Capital is all about. Is about companies and businesses who have a very strong developmental impact, but they're making money.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, in this whole impact space, there's depending there you can fall in this continuum, those that fall on concessionary, meaning you know they don't have to drive market rate returns. Like there's a place for that, but I would argue until we create business models that generate real returns, you fundamentally aren't fixing the problem because you need capital to be attracted to these different areas so they can be sustainable and do business in a new and different way. So, yeah, it's contrary to some people's like, wait, you're making profit. And you're like, yeah, unless you make profit, you're going to be a charity. And the problem is there's not enough money in the world for charities to do, which is why there's impact investing. So it's quite interesting. All right, I'm going to jump into another quick question here. How are you trying to change the world, whether it be big, whether it be small? How are you trying to change the world?
I like to say we're trying to move the pieces around the board in the right direction. And that sounds like a very, very flippant thing to say, because there's so many problems in the world, and some of them are existential. Some of them are very systemic. Some of them are deeply personal to the people concerned. And I think if you try and solve all the world problems at any one time, as any one person, that leads to a life of heartbreak. And what I would like to do is I would, through my own daily work, through the firm that I'm responsible for, I'd like to move the pieces around the board in the right direction. I would like to help people in the communities around where I live and work. I'd like to help them have a better life. And I'd like to do that through what is within my own sort of personal skill set. So financial services has always been a passion of mine, interest in academic and professionally. It's within my gift to use those skills to contribute towards a better life to those people around my, you know, around the communities where I live and work. And hence I have to do it.
Can you give us, the listeners, a brief understanding or description of microfinance? I mean, I think here in the U.S., when we hear the word microfinance, it's the $5 loan to the community of women who collectively, you know, pay and whatnot. So can you just right size us on that? And I know it's probably a longer discussion, but so I'm not asking for a lengthy discussion, but just a quick overview so people can understand.
Microfinance means loans from financial companies, small banks, microfinance banks, to business people. And those business people could be an individual who's driving a taxi. It could be a lady on the side of the road who's selling tomatoes. Or it could be a small business with 20 employees or 50 employees that's engaged in, you know, trading or harvesting or similar. Key things, one, it's an enterprise or predominantly an enterprise. Obviously, there's shades of gray. You know, you lend somebody $100, he puts $90 into his business, he spends $10 on his supper, you know, grows his business, and, you know, money's fungible between the personal account and the business account if you're sole trading taxi driver. One, it's business. Secondly, it's small. The clue's in the name, micro. It's small business. We're not lending, not involved in that cycle of lending to large corporations or even big, you know, big corporations. It's that micro and small businesses. And the term microfinance is still used in our world, in our industry, by some of our peers. But equally, it's not a word that we choose to use a lot at Verdant Capital, because we think when people hear microfinance, they think about a very specific business model, groups of ladies,
yes,
cash-based.
Yes.
And that's not how we view microfinance. We view microfinance as new ways to do that same purpose, but to do it much better, more efficiently, more cost effectively, using that new ecosystem that came into being 10, 15 years ago.
When did you realize the power of capital, and what does that mean to you?
I'll answer the second bit first.
Okay.
Running an investment company of 30, 40 people, quite a stressful job. We have good days, we have bad days, generally more good days, bad days. When I go to sleep at night after a bad day, I think about the 50,000 young people who have a career and an income driving a motorbike taxi in East Africa as a result of our work. $50 million of lending into that sector we've been involved in. That's approximately 50,000 motorbikes. Each motorbike is one individual who has that as his life. This is an individual who is generally young, generally 18 to 40. So a young person, typically somebody who's been let down by the education sector in his country, but resourceful, smart, wanting to build a better life for himself and a better life for his family, doesn't necessarily have obvious job opportunities in his local environment. And he's then providing an income for himself and his family, but he's also providing essential service because some people get around, get to work. And those 50,000 souls is what I think about when I go to sleep, when we've had a bad day.
That's good. Let me, I'm going to ask you, unless you know how to answer the first part of the question, I'll maybe phrase it another way. You were in the traditional financial services world and you made this transition to what you're doing today. What was it that made you do that transition? How did you view the world different? Why did you view the world different?
I think it's about being very, very personal. I can think of experiences sitting around in social context bars, restaurants with clients in Africa who were very, very good people, very wealthy people, are very successful individuals, helping them build their businesses bigger, big banks, big companies, big corporations, which I enjoyed a lot. And I very much liked meeting the people I met, but being really struck by the chasm between how I lived as a investment banker in Africa, how I still live today, I'm almost ashamed to admit, but and how our clients live, and then how people who are just as resourceful as us, just as smart as us, good people who happen to have been born on the wrong side of the motorway in Sandton, the skyscrapers that you may have seen, or some of your listeners may have seen in Sandton City. Within 2 miles of that, there is a township called Alexandra, which is one of the, you know, the more deprived townships in South Africa. You're born on the wrong side of the motorway, and your life opportunities are very, very different. And you don't get to sit in the restaurants and eat the sushi and drive home in your German car, and you're actually worried about eating anything and worried about getting anywhere. That struck me as being incredibly unfair. And a lot of what we do in our world, and as I say, if you try and fix all of the problems in the world, is a recipe for heartbreak. But what I'd like to do is try to make the world a little bit less unfair in terms of our immediate environments, or which is actually not immediate environments, actually the whole of Africa, actually, but the immediate environments around, you know, broadly speaking, where we live and work. Try and make things a little bit less unfair. And fairness comes across in a lot of things that we do. So, you know, we need to ensure that how our investee companies deal with their clients has got to be fair. They've got to treat clients fairly. Doesn't mean they're not tough with their clients. Because you've got to, you know, sometimes you've got to be a bit tough. If people aren't paying, you need to chase them, and you need to sometimes repossess their motorbike if they're not paying and they're just, you know, taking all that money and keeping it and then not paying them. You've got to repossess the bike and give it to somebody else's turn. But you've got to be fair. And when we deal with our direct counterparties, the investment credit companies, it's very, very important for us to make sure that we're dealing with them in a fair way and that we're treating our employees fairly within our firm. And we have a word we use a word a lot, which is called equity. We want to make sure there's equity in everything we do, but that's just a sort of fancy way of saying it.
I think a lot of us see what you saw, but not everybody actually acts on it. So I commend you. And maybe that actually runs into this next question. I've got two more questions. What does stewardship mean to you?
We have very little time. One faith-based community has an expression every second and every cent. And what that means is that come the very end, you are asked to account for how you lived your life and what you did. This is your personal life, your family, your friendships with your friends, your work. You're asked to account for every second and every cent. And I think that's important to me. And I think about the opportunities I've been given, which many of the people in our communities have never been given. And I think about how I use those opportunities and how I use those opportunities within Verdant. And we bring in very, very good people who have had great education locally. They're, you know, some of the fortunate people, but not necessarily the very, very, not sons of the well heeled, but a mixture of different types of people, but who have been relatively fortunate. And how I personally help them build their careers. And how, as a group, we're able to have a bigger positive impact on our communities every year than the year before. How we do that in a profitable, economically sustainable way and a very thoughtful way. It's very easy to do the same thing every day, every day, every day. But the world's changing very, very fast. And how we have the biggest impact on our communities may be different next year to today. The business models that we're working with in terms of clients in 2 years' time should be different to ones that were 2 years ago. We work very hard, but also very thoughtful.
Well, we appreciate your thoughtfulness, and I can tell that you think about these things and it's you live them out. We're going to end this conversation on a great question that is frankly hard to answer. But if you could have one dream come true for your life, what would it be? If you all could see his face, he is deeply thinking right now.
It's a bit like saying, well, if I could make a wish, right. If I was lucky enough to be granted any wish, I would. What would I wish for? And actually, I think I've been very, very fortunate in my life in terms of the opportunities I've had in terms of my education, my career to date. I've been very fortunate to be in a position to start Verdant Capital and make a go of it, make a success of it. So I've had so many blessings in my life. I'm reluctant to ask for any more blessings to be bestowed on me. I'd rather that wish to be bestowed to somebody else. I'd rather bestow that wish to one of our clients, or perhaps even more importantly, one of their end clients who runs a business which is smaller and more resourceful.
You're the first person who's ever answered that question that way. Yeah, I love your perspective on that. Well, look, I very much appreciate you coming on and sharing a little about yourself, about what you all do from a business perspective. And I think it's pretty clear that you are passionate about what you do. You care about what you do. And it's more than just a job. So I commend you in how you're living your life. And I know our listeners will be inspired just to hear. I'm going to throw out one other extra question. We'll see if we have time to actually put this in here. Is there anything that you would say to Americans who are listening to this podcast as it relates to what you do in Africa, any thoughts, perceptions you have that would be interesting to share?
If you have the chance to come to Africa and speak to people, rich or poor, you'd be surprised by how similar they are to you and how similar their aspirations are to your aspirations. They would be how similar their day-to-day objectives to meet those aspirations are to yours. And I think in terms of the small businesses, which are part of the overall ecosystem, and the small businesses we support and the individual entrepreneurs that we support, I think those individuals are living the American dream in Africa. Not the American dream, it is the dream. If we can help those people in some small way, and that help combined with their incredible resourcefulness and human talents, we can help those people in a small way, then I'm very, very happy. And if people in your community can help people in a small way here and make money in helping them, then why not?
Well, Edmund, we very much appreciate it. Listeners, don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Until then, I'm Jeff Schaefer. Edmund, anything you want to say in closing?
Jeff, thank you very much.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.